You are listening to an edited version of Get Radio's Business Brunch, which airs every Sunday at 11 a.m. on DAB Digital Radio across Oxfordshire and online at getradio.co.uk. For copyright reasons, we cannot play the songs mentioned in the show. But for more info and Business Brunch related content, head over to getradio.co.uk.
Get Radio's Business Brunch with Ben Thompson, sponsored by the Oxford Business Community Network. The friendly, no-pressure networking group for Oxfordshire's business people. Discover our membership packages to help you grow your business at obcn.co.uk.
Good morning, this is Get Radio and welcome to the Business Brunch with me, Ben Thompson, owner of Thompson & Terry Recruitment. Every week, I'm really, really fortunate to be joined by business leaders, large and small, to share the stories, the expertise and the knowledge of their business. And today's going to be no different. Today, I'm really excited to be joined by Paul Grace of Mentally Sound, who's really going to be sharing his journey throughout his career, including time at Coca-Cola, talking about mental health, and also really going to be talking about his current business, Mentally Sound, and some of the things for you to consider as the Oxfordshire business leader. This is the Business Brunch with me, Ben Thompson. I really look forward to welcoming Paul after this. Get Radio. Welcome back to the Business Brunch here on Get Radio. Today I'm joined by Paul Grace of Mentally Sound. And let's start by introducing Paul. So welcome, Paul. Thanks so much for joining us this morning.
Thanks, Ben. It's great to spend some time with you and the listeners. I'll give you a bit of kind of my background. So I set up Mentally Sound about 7 months ago when I left Coca-Cola after 27 years. So I've got a kind of a day job, which is a business consultant for the partnering group. But Mentally Sound is very much my passion project, where I get to talk to organizations and charities, not just about mental health within the corporate world, but some of my story of social mobility and how do you make the workplace just that bit more accessible and better for everybody.
Amazing. And so much we're going to unwrap and talk about over the next hour. So really, really looking forward to that. But before that, the most difficult question our guests get asked is to choose a song on the radio. So to be a DJ for a few minutes, what's your song choice and why have you picked it?
Well, the one job I've always wanted is to be a radio DJ. And I had a very short stint on hospital radio, which didn't end well, partly because I played one of my favourite songs, which is Girlfriend in a Coma by the Smiths. I'm a huge Smiths fan. My wife and I love them. We go and see all of the kind of tribute bands. So, yeah, Girlfriend in a Coma by the Smiths is my absolute go-to.
Oxfordshire Station, Get Radio.
Welcome back to the Business Brunch here on Get Radio. I'm following that amazing song and very fitting, both for hospital radio and for this morning's show. We have heard a little bit about Paul's background and indeed Mentally Sound. So let's just start by really kind of going into Mentally Sound as a business. So what do Mentally Sound do? And what was the point that you decided, you know what, I want to set up this passion of mine and I want to develop Mentally Sound?
Yeah, I was quite lucky, Ben. I got the opportunity to leave Coca-Cola after 27 years with, a bit of the financial burden taken away from me. And I experienced, and I'm sure we'll get into this later on, a breakdown 5 or 6 years ago. And I was in a pretty fortunate position. I was in a company that cared, and also, I could kind of financially support myself through those problems. And what Mentally Sound is all about really is talking and coaching businesses. I try and speak at conferences. I was at the British Institute of Innkeeping just last week at their National People Conference. And it really is just kind of telling my story and trying to simplify my leadership journey, which started as a 15-year-old trainee chef and ended up in some pretty big boardrooms. So, and I just try and tell that story and debunk it because, you know, whilst I'm very passionate about, you know, leadership and people development, human resources as it used to be called, I do think it gets overcomplicated. So I just try and tell my story in my language and try and help organizations focus on a few of the right things by doing the brilliant basics.
Absolutely, and that's certainly something that I'm really, really keen to build on over this show. Paul, we met through a CIPD event where you shared that story, and actually I thought it was so powerful, and I think everybody in the room really found it really useful and really interesting, but also inspiring and insightful all at the same time. And I think that it would be really good to go back to that 15-year-old chef. And can you just start by really kind of sharing that same story? Would that be okay?
Yeah, absolutely. So my parents thought it would be a good idea to buy a pub when I was 14. We lived in Margate in Kent on the south coast, and they thought it'd be a good idea to buy a pub on Dartmoor. My stepdad had just been made redundant, so they bought a pub which was 2 miles from the nearest house. And if there was two people that should never run a pub, it was my parents. It was a chaotic household. There was at any time between three, five, and seven kids from different marriages. And whilst they were amazing hosts, they weren't brilliant business people. And between them, they drank far too much. My stepdad was an alcoholic. He also had a problem with prescription drugs. So I think at the age of 15, walked out of my one and only GCSE, which was food nutrition. I always had a passion for cookery. Saw an advert for a trainee chef, and went and lucky enough got that job. And I walked into this amazing hotel on Dartmoor, into a proper kitchen with old school chefs, a big brigade of like 18 chefs in their tall white hats and their striped aprons. And I learned my trade within that. And I always had a bit of kind of imposter syndrome walking into a proper working environment at so young. But I kind of thought when they put that first bag of carrots in front of me and said, peel them, I thought I better be the best person they've ever had at peeling carrots. Or they asked me to mop the floors, so I better get good at that. And I was lucky I had a really supportive team. And fast forward 3 years, I was the sous chef, the second chef, with a brigade of 18 much older people working for me. And then went on from there and ran a small boutique hotel in Chepstow for a couple of years, stayed in the food business. But my break into kind of corporate was with a food company, which is Samworth Brothers, which own brands like Ginsters. They were advertising for a development chef, which is a very different skill. I'd been lucky, I'd been recognized, I'd got AA rosettes, and Michelin were kind of, handing out Bib Gourmands, which was for restaurants which served cheaper food at the time. So I'd been recognized, and I got this job in a development kitchen, and it was fantastic. I was creating ready meals at the birth of the British ready meal kind of boom. And I'd find myself in Marks and Spencer's and Sainsbury's on a weekly basis with a commercial guy or girl. And it soon dawned on me that they earned about 15 grand a year more than me, and they had a company car. I think it was a Cavalier SRI at the time.
What a car.
Yeah, so I thought I can use a calculator. So I kind of went into the commercial part of that business. And then after a couple of years, saw a job selling vending machines for Coca-Cola down in the West Country, which I just adored. It was a great job. And then I took steps through the business, from going into marketing, ending up eventually as the marketing director of the Coca-Cola company in Great Britain and Ireland. I was the field sales director and looked after innovation. So just through kind of working, learning, having, I think, the right attitude over, some great talent, because I'm definitely not academic, I managed to kind of work my way through that business with, and at times leading teams of 300 or 400 people. And I was lucky I had good support around me. I always thought never be the cleverest person in the room, and always kind of build teams and surround yourself with good people. But it was really at the kind of when I was, say, at the top of my game, when life events get in the way. So I was the marketing director. I just worked on things like, if you remember, Share a Coke, putting the names on Coke bottles. We'd just done the English Premier League deal. And I remember I was negotiating, or part of the team negotiating that deal. And I knew that I was kind of close to burnout or very stressed, and I started having an out-of-body experience. I could see myself from the top of the room looking back at myself in this meeting, and I felt I was contributing pretty well in this meeting. And what had kind of built up this kind of burnout and I guess just being emotionally full is that my stepdad had died 4 months before. And he had pancreatic cancer, and I was one of the kind of main carers for him. So whilst, the palliative care team were amazing, he wanted to die at home. And it felt like I was handed the keys to a jumbo jet and say, you need to land this. There's not going to be a happy ending here. And actually very relevant to some of the things that are going on in Parliament at the moment. And I spent those last 3 or 4 weeks kind of locked in a room with him, trying to help him the best I could. And my sisters were kind of coming in out as well, helping the burden. And I knew that things weren't right when I got back to work, and I started getting physical symptoms. It felt like I was wearing like a neoprene wetsuit, and it was vibrating the whole time. And I thought, I don't know what this is. And I was struggling with my kind of breathing, which I then learned was panic attacks. And it came to a head one day. I found myself rolled up in a ball on Paddington Station after I missed the last train home, and I was just this kind of crying mess, and I just couldn't string a sentence together. And that was the start of a breakdown. And to cut a long story short, if the business hadn't have been so supportive, I'm not sure if I would still be here to tell the kind of story. I had a an amazing supportive family at home, but I knew that I had to get better. And there's a couple of things. One is I really threw myself into counselling, but partly because I could afford to do so. I was being very well rewarded for my job, and I could throw a couple of hundred a week at seeing counsellors, where so many people don't, aren't afforded that luxury. So when I got back into work and I felt better, I started thinking differently about what do I really love at work, which was much more the people rather than the creativity of marketing. So went in to do a global leadership role in developing capabilities, and started telling my story and trying to make my mental health story accessible and realistic to people, because I was quite high profile in the business. I was the person that was always kind of emceeing the conferences, doing the big kind of keynote speeches, did a bit of kind of stand up, and I was very comfortable speaking. But also people thought, I can't believe Gracie's had a breakdown. If it can happen to him, it can kind of happen to anyone. And that's really was the kind of passion for when I got the opportunity to leave after nearly 3 decades, was to set up Mentally Sound and to kind of start telling that story in more detail. And but also looking at, what are the simple things that you can do. And I'm lucky I've connected with lots of people. I was on a panel last week with an amazing charity that have something called the Hub of Hope, which is an app which anyone can find out and access what are the help in your area for mental health, whether that's free or paid. And the more time I spend in this space, the more I think there is so much to do. And some simple things that organizations can do and leaders can do to make the conversations about how are people actually feeling in their business. One of the things I often talk about is the how are you is the most lied to question. People just kind of come back with, yeah, all good, fine. But great leaders make that conversation easier by simple things like, you know, if you were a traffic light, would you be amber? Would you be green? You know, out of 10, how are you? Well, I'm a six. What would make you a seven? You know, is there something that's happening outside of work? Is it something in work? And, you know, remember, you'll know Ben from, you know, running your own organization. If you've got someone that's a high performer within your team and they suddenly go off the boil, they're not suddenly rubbish at their job. There's something that's affecting that. So being able to spot those patterns, showing some kind of vulnerability as a leader and talking about your own things. I remember a boss of mine, you know, explaining to me what the panic attack was because he'd had them when he went through grief, and I didn't know what one was. I'd never had one before. You know, my first one was in Costa Coffee on the M5, and I thought, what's going on to me? And I remember going into John Lewis to buy a piece of camera equipment in my lunch hour when I was working in Oxford Street, and I couldn't string a sentence together. And I just thought, there's something, I think I'm full up here. There's something kind of going on. So those great bosses that can show that braveness and vulnerability can spot those patterns, but create the working environment where, you know, people can speak up. And you know, you would have heard me, I have this kind of phrase that people should be more gangster and less hamster in their business. And that means you create an environment where people can leave loud. You know, if someone's got to go to the school play or they've got caring responsibilities, they shouldn't have to apologize for that and slip out of the back door with people saying, have a nice afternoon, or that kind of thing. So, you know, a long answer to a short question, but that's the kind of story and the motivations behind what I'm doing today.
No, absolutely. And it's such a story that's going to impact so many, because I think there's so many learnings from that, which I'm really, really keen to build on over this show. So Paul, thank you so much for that for that insight. Let's continue the conversation after this.
Interviewing Oxfordshire's business leaders. This is the Business Brunch Podcast, sponsored by the Oxford Business Community Network. Build relationships with the ultimate goal of growing your business. obcn.co.uk.
Welcome back to the Business Brunch here on Get Radio. I mean, if you are just tuning in, definitely go back and listen to the first part of the show, because we're joined by Paul Grace of Mentally Sound, who's really shared his story from 15-year-old starting out as a chef, right through 27 years at Coca-Cola to launch in Mentally Sound. And I'm really keen to build on one piece that you said there, particularly first, if that's okay, Paul, because I think that you mentioned, which I think I always see with my recruitment hat on, that person who has been the top performer in maybe a sales environment and then suddenly maybe not performing quite the same. And I think so many leaders presume, and wrongly presume, one of two things. One, that their head's not in it, and I think that's a wrong phrase that's used, and that they want to do a bad job, which I think Graham Hutchins in one of our very of profitability in one of our very early shows said nobody wants to do a bad job, which I think is something we really need to remember. Or they presume that actually they're asked the question, are you okay? And as we've said, most people are going to say, yeah, fine, thanks. So I guess within that environment, I think how should employers really ensure that, or maybe not ensure, what can employers do to give the best support to, in sometimes a really stressful environment and sometimes a really challenging environment, to their team before we get to the point where actually they are struggling? And how, what can you, I guess, what are the preventative measures is probably a better way of wording what I'm trying to say.
I think the first thing is leaders that, you know, make proper time for real conversations with their teams. And, you know, we've all been in those situations where you've got three or four one-to-ones in your diary to pick up with the team. And if you're not careful, when you're busy, they can become formulaic. And it's a bit of a tick box of, you know, how's this project going? How's that project going? I think, you know, half of those conversations need to be, how are you? What's happening with you? You know, how are things going? And that's when you start to kind of spot those patterns. So you have to get better at having those conversations. And it's not, you know, not everyone can have great empathy, but you can learn to be an active listener, and you can kind of find out where, you know, you can help people. It's much better for any organization to turn somebody around from a poor performance if they're, you know, if there's an external effect on them, than, you know, writing them off and starting again. And so it's, you know, it's leaders to really start having real conversations with people and getting comfortable with that, getting comfortable sometimes being uncomfortable. And that is so difficult. You know, it's not an easy thing for people to do. I do it in my local pub with mates that have kind of struggled. And I do the simple, how are you today? You know, 7, 8, 9. And I get mates of mine now that would just come up to me first and go, it's a 9 out of 10, Paul, you know? And so getting, you know, making those conversations easier, that's so important. The other thing is to really make sure that you give individuals the space and the time. So if somebody finds themselves in a situation where either they need to work reduced hours or they need to take time out of the business to focus on their mental health, if they had a heart murmur or anything else, people wouldn't give it a second thought. They would let them get on with it and put them in the hands of the medical profession or whatever their recovery is. With mental health, because it's, you know, largely unseen, you know, there are organizations that somebody goes off and then they're ringing them and connecting with them every 3 or 4 days. That's the last thing that somebody needs. You know, they're away from the business for a specific reason, and hopefully they're getting the treatment. And, you know, small and big organizations can also help that by just putting the right things in place, whether it's mental health first aiders. It's not a phrase that I particularly like, but just getting people that you know are good buddies that can help those conversations, because taking the lid off the problem is the absolute kind of key linchpin. If you can take the lid off, it releases some of the pressure, you can start talking about it. And then from that moment, I feel like you're in kind of some step of recovery, hopefully. So all stems from that. But so many organizations overcomplicate it. It's a bit like when a company says, these are the values and the behaviors that we're going to run our business by, and we're going to roll out these new behaviors. You don't roll out behaviors. You know, they're kind of, you learn, you coach, you understand what's the, you know, the right way to kind of approach and behave, whether that's from a mindset perspective or whether that's the way that the kind of business runs. So, you know, focusing on one or two things, and that first thing might be having great conversations, is much better than trying to do this kind of really wide program. And of course, there are great, you know, workplace support that companies can buy into if they can afford to do that as part of their total rewards package. And that's, you know, as we know, and you'll know from your business, when that's becoming more and more important to especially younger workers coming in. So they want to know the kind of values of the business. They want to know the culture of the business. But some of those support things are really kind of important. You know, my 21-year-old daughter's just done a year's work placement as part of a graduate degree. So has her boyfriend. And they both had like wellness days, which is something which is alien, you know, pretty alien to me. And, you know, where they felt that they could take a day off if, you know, they needed it, and without going through lots of steps to do that. So, you know, why, you know, that all needs managing. Some of those things just make workplaces so much better, so much more accessible to people that, you know, coming in and joining those organizations. And, you know, Forbes did a report in October last year, and, you know, the something along the lines of every $1, let's call it a pound, spent on mental health in the workplace will recover you 4.5 times that. Because one of the biggest problems is people presenting themselves at work but not fully showing up because they're not, you know, because they've got issues. And, you know, when I ran large scale sales teams, you know, if you've got a team of 400 people, you know, within that group of 400 people, you're going to have people that have got gambling addictions. You're going to have no problem people that have got drug problems, that are going through grief. That is society. And it doesn't matter if you've got a team of 10 or a team of five, these things touch us all. And mental health doesn't, you know, you don't choose mental health. It kind of chooses you. It's just one of those things that, that happens. And of course, you know, they're like, all workplaces, you know, there can be times when, you know, the boundaries are kind of stretched. So again, being able to have those conversations, spot the patterns, can be just so helpful, and investing in it. It's, you know, if you're running a finance company, then your key capability is making sure that people can do finance, that can either, you know, run the algorithms, run spreadsheets, do the forecasting, all those things. This is no different. It's a capability about being better with people that needs to be built, which again increases your kind of retention. It will, over the long term, increase the output and the productivity. You know, we're all business people, and at the end of the day, we want to either make money, whether it's for a charity, whether it's a not-for-profit, or whether it's for shareholders or investors. And, you know, the biggest asset that you've got is your people. And, you know, that is so easily forgotten. So, you know, whether it is one-to-one mentoring that I do with leaders, whether it's just talking at events, it's just shining a light on some of the simple things that need doing.
You've absolutely hit the nail on the head there. And I think one of the points that you made earlier in terms of benefits and sort of focusing on your daughter's experience is, I think a huge part of our business is employing people that are graduates, let's say, for argument's sake. And I think that there's such a misconception when I speak to business leaders and recruiters that these people want loads of flexibility and they want to be driving a really fancy car and they want really modern offices and they want all of these things. And actually, I think there's a bit of a joke in our building because we've got the smallest office. But actually, what our staff really appreciate is, actually, if they're having a tough day, go and take the day off. Actually, if they need to talk to a counsellor, do it. The bill's on us. And I think some of those things make such more of an impact than actually having four laptops on a three-person desk. Like, nobody cares about that. It really, really is true. Let's have another song and we'll continue the conversation after this.
This is the Business Brunch Podcast from Get Radio. Sponsored by the Oxford Business Community Network. Discover our membership packages to help you grow your business at obcn.co.uk.
Welcome back to the Business Brunch here on Get Radio. If you are just tuning in, please, and I know that I say this regularly, but today I really, really encourage you to go and listen back to the show because I think it will make a really big impact on, if not yourself, somebody that you know and somebody that you care about. So Paul, before that break, we've spoken about your journey. We've spoken about things to look out for and what businesses small and large can do. And I think that one of the things that I really, really hate, particularly when mental health is concerned, is statistics, because I think that it's really important under the umbrella of mental health is that we remember that nobody is a statistic. We're individuals, aren't we? But I am going to be a hypocrite here because I am going to talk about statistics to ask you my next question. One of the things I was really surprised to hear is that business owners are significantly more likely than any other category to take their own life, which I think is a really bad statistic. And I think that a lot of the people that listen to this show will be the small business owner, will be at the top of an organization. And I think that I know many that really do struggle. What's your advice to somebody in that scenario who doesn't have that traditional org chart of somebody ahead of them to ask for support and report into? Should they talk to their team? Should they get external support? Like, what's the thing to do?
Well, I think you know, this you've hit on a, you know, really important subject. And And I've over my time worked with I can name a couple of senior executives that have taken their own lives due to one thing or another, and friends of mine. And in my darkest hour, you know, I understood why people did that or felt that was right for them. And it's lonely at the top. And I think, you know, it puts a different kind of pressure on you, where you've got maybe, you know, 20, 30, 200, 300 mortgages, you know, which are down to you of your team. So I think building the right network is so important. And I'm not a great networker. And, you know, after I come off stage and do a speech, that kind of coffee afterwards is just kind of, it's not really my cup of tea, if I'm honest, and I'll do it. But getting, you know, a good kind of, let's call it a friendship group that you can rely on, whether that's like-minded people that are also in the same situation, people that you've worked with before that might have gone on to other businesses, to keep those connections where you can have that conversation, because not many people understand it if they haven't been there, and it's a different kind of pressure around that. So, you know, the number one for everything for me is to get the lid off and start talking about it, whether that's just a conversation with someone you can confide in, or whether or not it's you know, an external resource. And, you know, counseling is an amazing thing. And, you know, in the same way that senior business leaders might take a coach to help them, take an executive coach, and I've done some of that kind of coaching, you know, to actually see a counsellor is another great situation where you're not going to be judged, you can have a conversation. And my counselling experience was very positive. I went through a couple of counsellors, but I found that they were actually at the end giving me the kind of tips and techniques that I needed to kind of get around this. So the first bit was unpacking and peeling back the onion. And then I moved on into much more of a, right, how do I start controlling some of these feelings when the pressure's really on? So I think that's some advice to leaders. If you can find it in your network friendship group, LinkedIn can be your best friend and it can be your worst friend at times, because, you know, there's a lot of people that just post on LinkedIn when they're kind of showing off and something great's happened. And if you're not in a good place, that can be, you know, that can be quite tough, where you just get this scrolling of, you know, yay, you know, everyone's amazing, you know, kind of thing. So again, find your group, find your core, and, you know, start the conversation is the absolute kind of key to that. And not everyone's kind of comfortable with it, but, you know, I never thought I'd, you know, sit on a couch in, you know, in a fancy house in North Oxfordshire and talk to a 70-year-old woman who was my counsellor. But I tell you what, it was amazing. It just helped me so much. So yeah, get talking.
No, really, really, really good advice there. Really good advice. And I'm keen now to talk about a subject which I think I so regularly see as a recruiter, which is probably building on what you've touched on a little bit before, which is, I think society teaches us a lot of us, particularly in the modern age, but I think it's always been a problem that we must have the fanciest car, we must have a promotion every year, we must have the fanciest holidays, we must... a phrase that I absolutely hate is, we must keep our chin up, or have broad shoulders, or all of these phrases that I think are wrong to have. But I think that a lot of people that we speak to have really big ambition, like they really want to do well. And I think that admitting that they're struggling can be seen in potentially their eyes as a sign of weakness, or admitting they can't get there, or I think a better phrase is, maybe not quite yet. What's your advice in that scenario? So people that are potentially early career and really looking to push, but how do you get that balance right of pushing but actually taking care of yourself, and actually at the same time ensuring that you don't become burnt out, or you don't you know, break yourself really in the nicest possible way.
Yeah, so one of the things that I've taken into my kind of keynote speeches, and it's something that I've done for years with people in my teams, is this very simple scale of 1 to 10 down one side, and then a timeline at the bottom. And you talk about how happy were you over that period of, say, 6 or 7 years. You can do it with someone that's just left school, or you can do it so much longer on. And it starts the conversation about what really kind of, why were they happy within that role? Was it the autonomy? Was it the leadership they had? So really working out what you love is so kind of important. So, and then also reminding, especially with younger talent coming into into business now, is that their careers are going to be a lot longer than mine was and will be, because everyone's going to be working longer. And, you know, and I have, you know, I have these conversations with having, you know, a daughter that's about to kind of step into the corporate world. Whether you earn 28 grand or 38 grand as a graduate doesn't really matter. Okay. It does if you want to, you know, rent a house in Fulham or something along those lines, but it's the fact that you've got to take a slightly kind of more midterm approach to this, to say, what's the value I'm going to get out of this from an experience perspective, which has a huge value to it, and then might make me more marketable, more employable, maybe with somebody else in the future. So you've got to think of it as a longer continuum. I think maybe 10, 15 years ago, it was all about, I want a BMW before I'm 30 and I want to earn 50K. Now I think those conversations are changing a little bit, where it is a bit more about, what's the kind of balance I can get around with work? I still want to travel. I still want to do these things. So that degree of kind of flexibility within that as well. But yeah, I think, you know, it's understanding that, you know, time is so important. And, you know, it's a mindset thing. It's, you know, you'll know as a recruitment. When I'd be recruiting for a role, you know, whether it was someone that I mentored, they'd reach out to me, they'd come to me and they'd go, oh, I've seen this great job. It's, you know, senior brand manager for XYZ. Who else is going for it? Well, you can't affect that, who else is going for it, you know? Unless it's clear that there's a preferred candidate, right? Let's all be kind of honest about that, and then you enter into it as an experience. But the mindset needs to be, I can, you know, okay, I can learn. I can take this as an experience. And that, again, is, to me, is just so important, is just to understand the value of spending time in a role. You know, I've worked in an organization where it was quite usual to bounce role every kind of 18 months, 2 years. I don't always subscribe to that, because, you know, sometimes you really need to get good at it. And then, you know, then being able to impart that knowledge to kind of get the pipeline ready for the next person to do that role. So I don't know if that kind of in a roundabout way answers your kind of question, but that's definitely my kind of thought on it. And I think it's changing, and I think it will continue to change as well. And who knows whether, you know, legislation will change that even further about the way that we work and the expectations of people coming into the industry.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree more with you. I think that so regularly I talk to candidates who say, I must earn this. And I think sometimes I do think there's huge importance of being paid market rate, in inverted commas. But I think that the most important things that we're going to factor is, how happy are you going to be? Is it going to get you to your long-term goals? And actually, I think that so regularly we talk to people in society who almost train us the wrong things, and train us that actually X, Y, and Z is important, when actually happiness has always got to be the most important thing, followed by your aspirations. And aspirations doesn't necessarily need to be a job title. It's your way of life, isn't it?
Yeah, and you know, it's the whole kind of adage which I've always kind of spouted, is that, you know, money's great, but money gives you choices. That's what money gives you. You know, whether you can buy more expensive shirts, or you know, you can go on a different holiday, or you can just turn the heating on. It gives you kind of choices. It doesn't automatically give you kind of happiness and the right culture that you're in, or you know, and the right working environment is so important. But also going back to that point, and I know it's a little bit off subject, Ben, but it's also understanding as people come into, you know, into the working world, you know, what a total rewards package is. You know, you know, the difference of someone paying 5% into your pension or 3% is a big deal. But when you're 21 or 22 or even 25, you just think, you know, that can wait. So actually getting more skilled in having those conversations and debunking it, you know, I'm a 52-year-old that still doesn't really understand all my pensions, you know, and I should do, you know, so, you know, I've been quite comfortable running, you know, a team with a budget of $20 or $30 million a year. But yeah, I'm not even sure, you know, if I could explain.
Do you know what? I'm really sorry, Paul. I'm going to go so off topic now. So I mentioned before that we created our own graduate program at Thompson and Terry, and this is by no means a plug for it, but we prove that actually there's so many university students coming out of university who don't know what they want to do. There's so many small businesses who don't have a marketing person or a finance person or a whatever person. And there's so many perceived low value stuff that ticks the box for the graduates, but actually ticks the box for a business. So we self-funded the graduate program, rolled it out 7 times in our own business, and we've rolled it out across 100 times within the clients. But one of the things that when we get the feedback on that graduate program that is so valuable is that actually we cover some life stuff. So what does a pension mean? Should you have a Chase bank account because then you get 1% cash back? What should you put on finance and what shouldn't you put on finance? And we're by no means financial advisors, but I think that as employers, I think we get really scared of giving personal advice to our teams. And actually, I think if I look at my own team, who have all joined on the graduate program at one point or another, albeit some of them for over 5 years ago now, I think just that life advice is so key. So I'm sorry, Paul, you set me up there, and I didn't need to be given an inch to take a mile there, did I? But I
no, not at all.
It's an important topic, really important.
It's absolutely so important. And you know, maybe there's another kind of whole show within that, because of all the graduates I've been lucky enough to work with, those people that are assigned to them to mentor them, that's what makes them.
Absolutely.
You know, that they really are invested in this young person and see them as, you know, the future of the business. But we are going off topic. But
absolutely. We are coming very much towards the end of the show, and partly because I keep going off topic. But nevertheless, let's go back to topic. One of the things that I think would be good to really kind of end on in the final stint is just practical advice. And I think you've given quite a lot throughout the show, but I think it'd be really good to really talk to those who are listening at home, whether they be probably the Oxfordshire business owner, but I think it could be anyone, of what should they take away from this show, whether it be something we've not spoken about yet or really kind of highlighting something we've already spoken about. What's the takeaway tip under this umbrella?
So, you know, whether you're in business or not, you're just kind of a being. So there's kind of 9 things that I talk about. The first one is to actually get the lid off it, start talking. The second one is to see the sky every day. It's really, you know, if you're depressed, it's easy to kind of stay indoors and watch Tipping Point, when actually, if you go and see the sky every day, that just helps. Some people call the third one meditation. I just think it's, you know, finding that place where you can sit and reflect and try and clear your mind. I had to learn to kind of, I never thought someone would teach me how to breathe, but I remember, you know, really understanding how you can kind of slow down your breathing when you're panicked. That's really kind of important. And then, you know, I won't go through the whole list, but maybe, you know, we'll get a chance and you can post it on the socials or something along those. But also that marking yourself out of 10 every day. I keep a journal. I can see whether I've had a 4 out of 10 day, a 6 out of 10 day, and why that was. But also indulge yourself. You know, if you've got a passion, mine's collecting vinyl records, you know, so sometimes I listen to a whole album back to front, and that's, or I take my camera out for a couple of hours and I go and take pictures. If you can find a passion to indulge yourself, I remember, you know, getting really into Lego during lockdown. I just find that so mindful, that really helps me. And, you know, every day I need to find a certain amount of closeness, fun, and achievement. And I need to get that either at work or at home. And that's kind of, you know, where I kind of come from. But don't ignore it. Walk up to it. There's much more help out there than you think there is. Whilst the NHS is incredibly stretched, you know, GPs are a great starting point, but also so are your mates, because believe me, one out of six of them would have gone through this and maybe have never had the chance to talk about it. But once you lift the lid, as I did when I was in a senior position at Coca-Cola, so many people gravitated towards me. You know, if you can show a bit of bravery and vulnerability on that, that's so important.
Absolutely, absolutely. And yeah, what good advice, and what a good way to end the show. I think my advice as an ending note is really to follow Mentally Sound and to follow Paul, because he shares such insight, such honest insight, which I think we can all really learn from, and actually we can all probably really help somebody else with. So please do that. I'm really sad to say, but unfortunately, that is the end of the show. An hour went very, very quickly. And if you are just tuning in, we've had Paul Grace of Mentally Sound, so please do follow up there. We will be back next week with a brand new topic and some brand new guests. So we are joined by Anthony and Melanie Tattersall of Darsica Logistics, and we're going to be talking about sustainable logistics, award-winning process, and also working as a husband and wife team running the business, which I think is something a little bit different, but something we're looking forward to learning all about. And just finally, a reminder, you can listen to this radio show online or on the radio each and every Sunday at 11 a.m. There will also be a podcast format which is available via all your favorite podcast platforms and is released on the Monday morning. And do watch out for the video format so you can see our lovely guests, which is put out on the Get Radio Facebook page on the Tuesday, and also their website. But for now, whatever you're doing in Oxfordshire, my challenge to you is really think about the show and really think about how can you help somebody as a result, or indeed help yourself. And enjoy the rest of your Sunday, and we'll see you next week.